It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
And we'd like to welcome our guests, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Good morning, Cecil. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you. We got you on the phone all hooked up and ready to go. And in studio here is Wes Collins. Good morning, Wes.
Good morning, Mike.
I guess we're going to continue our conversation we started last week, gentlemen, on partitions and diving deep into that topic. Today, we'll begin discussing the offsets and credits of partitions. Any of you guys take that one, take that task, Wes?
I guess I can start.
You can start it.
Start
sure.
The talk on that since I think I was maybe one of the I was definitely one of the last ones talking. That's what I was about to say.
I think
I need to drink
two.
A little bit more coffee before I get to say anything this morning. But if you'll allow me.
I'll allow you, sir.
I'll continue.
That's right. Please do.
Right. So we talked last week about the petition to partition, which is a process of either dividing property in kind, like dividing it like a piece of pie, you know, into different sections for the owners, or having a partition sale. And so I think we pretty much concluded the conversation with regard to the division of the property in kind. But just to recap on that, that situation is when you can divide the property in kind.
Mm-hmm.
If it's like a large tract, or if it's like basically property that may be divided without the value of the whole being diminished by being sliced up.
Makes sense.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you're dealing with a beach house or, you know, any kind of property that has a residence on it, then that's going to be very unlikely that you can do that, right? So then you move on to the sale process. Any co-tenant owner, meaning co-owner, and this could be, you know, children that inherited property or, you know, as we say, heir property, property that's been in the family forever. This could be property that was held tenants by entirety by husband and wife, and then after a divorce, it becomes tenants in common. So any type of property that's tenants in common, undivided interest in property, any of the owners, doesn't matter if you own a 1% interest or a 80% interest of the property or 50% interest, you have the right to partition to force the sale of the property.
Mm-hmm.
So we either go through the process of a public sale, which is kind of like a foreclosure sale on the courthouse steps, or you go through a private sale, which usually involves a sale where a realtor is put in place to list the property just like any other property that would be listed.
Sure.
So most of the partition sales that we deal with are going to be those private sales where you have a realtor and the person, you know, listing the property, and it's just on the market. There's a commissioner or commissioners appointed, and that's the person or persons who have the obligation to sell the property, to deal with the money. Money comes in, let's say it's a lawyer that comes into the trust account, and then it's divided out based on the distributed out based on the percentage ownership of the property and consistent with the orders of the court. Now, that's kind of what's led us up now to this offsets and credits conversation, the division of the money. Who gets the money?
Mm-hmm.
Well, normally, as I indicated, it's a percentage division of the property based on the ownership. Let's say we have $100,000 to disperse and there's three owners. Well, it's going to go out $33,333.33
to each
per owner.
Yeah.
Okay. However, there are offsets and credits we have to take into consideration. So any party may petition the court for reimbursement of certain things. And normally those certain things are things such as payment of taxes, payment of insurance, payment of maintenance, and upkeep. So that normally is a hearing in and of itself. You normally have your initial hearing, which is where the court takes evidence with regard to whether the property can be divided or whether it's appropriate for a partition. And the court doesn't have a lot of discretion there. If it's tenants in common, then you're entitled to it.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll approve it and appoint a commissioner. But then normally later on in the process, we have another hearing that deals with the issue of anyone who wants to come forward who put on evidence with regard to taxes, insurance, maintenance, upkeep, you know, these type of things. So the court then, you know, considers that evidence and enters an order that the commissioner has to follow as it relates to these offsets, you know, and credits. And that can be, in many cases, Mike, the most contested part of that. I mean, things can get really, it sounds, as I describe it here, like it would be simple.
Mm-mm.
It's not always simple. Sometimes also it's muddied by the fact that, let's say, one party has been paying the taxes and insurance and maintenance, but they've been living in the property to the exclusion of all the other owners.
Mm-hmm.
And so the court has to weigh that to a certain extent. Sometimes there's the right in this offsets and credits conversation to a claim for rent. Okay, let's say that comes in two scenarios. Let's say that we have the one party who's in the property to the exclusion of the others. Well, the others say, well, hey, you used the property to our exclusion. You need to pay us reasonable rental value.
Sure.
You don't get that, by the way. You can't get that reasonable rental value under that scenario because the other two owners would have the right to use the property
just
if they wanted to. They can move in if they wanted to.
Right.
That's the way that works. But let's say the property is rented to a third party, and one of the parties has received all the rental income.
Different story.
Then you got to divide that up.
Yeah.
So a lot of moving parts when we get to this argument over money relating to the partition.
And Cecil, the way Wes unpacked that and explained it very clear and concise. Some of the elements in there, the taxes and insurance, that's pretty objective. But like he said, when you get into the weeds, person living there or a third party rent or person renting it out and collecting all the rent, that's where it becomes muddied. This seems a little overwhelming for an individual to try to ride alone through the courts without counsel alongside. Would you not agree?
Well, I think also, Mike, it's important to say that, you know, I think our listeners can kind of follow here. This is a very typical situation. I mean, many, many times property is inherited by children. Maybe one of the children is no longer living, and then that child has children, so there's a couple of grandchildren involved. The next thing you know, we've got three, four, five owners in the property. One of them then takes dominion and control over the property, lives in the property, pays the taxes, maybe makes an improvement to the property, paints the property, adds on, repairs the porch, puts in a new bathroom. You know, these are typical, everyday, all-American issues, aren't they, Mike?
Absolutely.
I mean, this is what happens in the real world. The person who takes dominion and control, maybe they don't move into the property, but they certainly don't want to lose the property by the failure for the others to help pay the taxes, keep the insurance maintaining on the property, do repairs so that the property doesn't go into further disrepair, like, for instance, with our storms that have come, you know, maybe the roof needed to be repaired and keep the property from really deteriorating even further. So they're just kind of many times seems to be, if you will, the Indian chief, the person who takes over the property to maintain it. And then all of a sudden, you know, there needs to be a division of the property. And clearly this person at that point, as Wes has been speaking about, says, well, but hey, wait a second here. You know, I'm the one who's done the following things to the property. I think another side issue that came up in our conversation this morning is so very interesting. We're talking about the terminology in the law is called an undivided interest. These children own this property in what we lawyers call an undivided interest. They own their part, but they also have access to the whole.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this goes into what we study in law school, but that access to the whole of the property is exactly what we were just talking about when Wes was mentioning that, that one brother can't turn to his sister and say, well, but you lived in the property.
Yeah. Yeah.
And therefore, I'm entitled to some rent. Well, you know, the brother that didn't live in the property has just as much access to the whole of the property as does the other child. So we get this question often from families where they say, I inherited a third of my parents' home. Can I live there?
Mm-hmm.
Can I just stay there? Can I... Maybe the word is, can I, you know, do I have a squatter's right, mm-hmm. if you will, to just be at the property? And the answer to that question is that, you know, well, Mr. Jones, you do own the whole of the property. So, yes, you do have a right to be there. You're not trespassing. You have the right to be on the property. But, of course, there are going to be these other issues that evolve. Just as we're discussing today, you know, about taxes, insurance, upkeep, maybe being able to rent the property to a third property, so a third person. So I did want to take a minute, though, and explain the nature of an undivided interest,
mm-hmm.
the way in which that's defined in North Carolina law, that we own the part, but we have the right to the whole of the property. And this creates these kinds of dilemmas that we find ourselves. Now, in terms of the lawyering, absolutely. This is just very, very difficult for most families and part owners of property to figure out, to negotiate, and get resolved. Sometimes I might also add, the reason they just haven't all listed the property and sold it anyway, or even listed it with a realtor for rental, for the rental market, is because they're not agreeing. They mm-hmm. disagree with each other as the various issues. Maybe there's disharmony to begin with. So a lot of these files begin and end with the fact that there's already some hard feelings, if
yeah.
you will, between some of the owners in the property. But our listeners are clued in right now. They're hearing loud and clear, and they're saying to themselves, oh, yeah, this is the way it is with me and my family. You know, what happens if we all inherit mom and dad's property, you know, a third, a third, and a third? What in the world am I going to do about my deadbeat brother or my deadbeat sister? You know, sorry to have to say that, Mike, but
yeah.
those are kind of the issues that evolve in these files.
Well, I was wondering, too. I mean, I was thinking along what you just said there, Cecil. Can partners, or to be partners, uh-huh. whether they're family members or otherwise, can they do something at the outset rather than waiting till it gets to the point where they want to get out, in other words, sell the property? Is there something that they can put in place at the point at which they receive mom's property, and now there's three siblings that have equal access to it? Is there something that you can put in place early on so you don't have this problem at the end, like we're talking about?
Well, I think that you're mentioning, and we do get that inquiry. In fact, I have a file like that right now, where a particular client is saying, I want to go ahead and structure my properties, my real properties, in an entity that has continuity and has perpetuity even after I die. I don't want my children to just be out there, you know, a third, a third, a third in these various rental properties. And so the answer there, of course, Mike, is that we're creating a family limited liability company, or just basically a limited liability company, that through the operating agreement of the corporate entity, there will be structure and guidelines. There will be the added infrastructure of the way in which these properties will be managed, will be rented, will be maintained. And all of that is set up on the front end. And so, yes, there is a way to avoid this undivided interest
okay.
conundrum
Good.
If the client on the front end plans for it.
So through an LLC, you're establishing the ground rules of the future. That's good to know. Let's take a break here. We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins, and we're talking about offsets and credits, which come under the umbrella of petition to partition. And we'll continue this conversation after this break. If you'd like to have a conversation with Harvell and Collins, call 252-726-9050. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. We have Cecil on the phone, Wes in studio, and we're talking about petition to partitions, offsets and credits. Interesting conversation, gentlemen, I have to say.
So Wes, moving on with regard to this, of course, we've talked about the offsets and credits a little bit this morning. Another important aspect of this is that the clerk of court has jurisdiction over the entire process. So if there's a necessity to enter orders regarding anything pertaining to the partition, then that decision is made by the clerk of court where the respective property is located. So those issues can come up. Let's say that we have a property that is going to sell, but it's occupied by someone, and we need to get orders to vacate. Well, there's a process that you can go through in order to have a writ of possession issued that then is executed by the sheriff's department, to have the property vacated. Because, you know, if you're in a, well, we just had one recently, basically, where we were under contract for the sale of the property, but the buyer did not want to close on it until it was vacated. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to buy, you know, a lawsuit where they had to get someone out of their property they just purchased. So, and that was smart. The buyer should do that.
Right.
The buyer could require the commissioners to go move the clerk for that relief, and the clerk, of course, entered that order. And my understanding is the property has been vacated, the locks have been changed, and that's just the way the cookie crumbles on that. Other things before the clerk come up quite often, and this is kind of maybe a hybrid between offsets and credits and the clerk's authority. Let's say that we have the property listed, but the realtor is making a recommendation that certain repairs are made, and in the event those repairs are made, we can close. Let's say the buyer is requiring that. Or let's say there's something in particular with the property that needs to be corrected that is really impeding a sale or getting a contract on the property for, you know, the highest and best number. Mm-hmm. We can't really reach our fair market value because the plumbing issue that needs to be fixed or the electrical issue that needs to be fixed. A buyer's not willing to take on that obligation. So you could have a situation like that where, let's say, a property owner, a tenants in common owner, steps up and spends money on fixing whatever it may be, okay, or making whatever that repair may be. And it could be something that's pricey. Well, the clerk could then certainly require that reimbursement from the sale back to that person. That would be kind of the offsets and credit type mm-hmm. expense, but it's something that is being spent during the actual partition. So the prudent way for any owner to do that would be, okay, I'll fix this plumbing issue. I'll pay for fixing this electrical issue, but I want to get an order from the clerk first saying I'm going to be fully reimbursed mm-hmm. for that before I go do it.
Makes sense.
As opposed to hoping that the clerk is going to approve it or one of your siblings is going to fight you on it mm-hmm. for whatever reason, and we end up spending a lot of money on attorney's fees with regard to that. Now, on attorney's fees, the statute has always been that the clerk can order attorney's fees in a partition. If you know, you spend money to go forward with the partition, those attorney's fees can be reimbursed off the top. But that has been a discretionary standard, meaning, you know, you typically don't get attorney's fees in any kind of litigation unless you have a contract that allows you to get those or unless you have a specific statute on point that indicates if you prevail, you get your attorney's fees. A lot of people think that, okay, if I win my case, I automatically get my attorney's fees. That's not really the way it works mm-hmm. in this state or in most other states, unless you have that specific statute. So until October of 2020, we had a situation where the granting of attorney's fees was discretionary by the clerk, meaning he or she could say,
it could.
Maybe not. Now the language has changed in the statute, and in the event a party has spent money on attorney's fees for purposes of moving forward with the partition, it's really benefiting everyone. The language has changed to a shall. So that's a big difference between a may and a shall. May is discretionary. Shall is, the clerk has to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's reasonable attorney's fees. So the clerk would have to consider what they are, you know, the billing statements, you know, why they were this number, those type of things, not just to prove whatever amount is asked for.
Sure.
Right. So it's a shall. Now, that wouldn't necessarily be attorney's fees relative to a fight over offsets and credits. Maybe, maybe not. But it would certainly be attorney's fees relative to the petitioner, the Tennyson common owner, who filed the partition to get the ball rolling and get the thing moving.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I unpacked a whole lot right there, but
he
I
sure
think
did.
You're following with me
yeah.
on that.
And Cecil and Wes is right. We unpacked a lot today in our show. What would you hope our listeners take away? We have about 2 minutes left in today's program. What's the takeaways from today's discussion?
Well, I think it's just nice for our listeners to understand that there is a way out, Mike. I mean, that there is absolutely a remedy mm-hmm. when they're in property and they feel locked down. They feel that they're paying taxes, insurance, upkeep. The other parts of their family are not maintaining the same. There is a way to seek resolution on this. And it's important to do so because, of course, what happens with these undivided interests is that they divide again. And rather than three children, then
yep.
once something happens
True.
To one child, we've got three more children. Keep in mind, in the state of North Carolina, there are spousal rights, so people's spouse can many times become an issue in these files. And so the sooner we clear the title, make the property ready for its highest and best use, the better off we will be. Don't continue to just linger in these undivided interest situations. Let's seek some closure on exactly where the title rests.
Yeah, I agree, because it would just fester. And like you said, you don't think about it, but we started this discussion and description with three property owners, which begets six, which begets 12, 24. You do the numbers, and before you know it,
yeah.
it's a whole
yeah.
gaggle. I'll tell you, if right. I find myself in this position, I'm running to Harvell and Collins to get you guys to saddle up with me and carry my water through this whole process. It can be complicated and overwhelming to the individual. That's my takeaway.
One more comment is
20 seconds.
That we have made a lot of allusion to the fact that these files evolve out of conflict. Sometimes that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that, you know, this person, this particular undivided interest owner has been living the property
yeah.
peacefully. The rest of the family knows it. Oh, there's no problem. They maintain the taxes, the insurance. They go by and they visit. No problem
right.
whatsoever.
Right.
Well, that's okay. For the short term, for a couple of years maybe, but that's not a real good solution
no.
long term to property ownership.
Right, because everything comes to an end at some point. Good point, Cecil, and that's a good end note to this conversation. If you'd like to reach Harvell and Collins, call 252-726-9050.